Welcome to the Bylines Network podcast, an audio accompaniment to our growing family of regional Bylines publications.
Each week, our team examines issues that matter, speaking to politicians, leaders, and activists across the country, putting the spotlight on voices outside the mainstream.
This week, we're talking about youth involvement in politics, why some get involved, why don't, how we got involved in Bylines and engaged in politics as a whole, and what we can do to increase young engagement in politics and activism.
Hi, I'm Kerry. I'm living at home in Lincolnshire and I write and edit for Yorkshire Bylines.
I'm Julian Greenbank. I live and work in the city of Bristol and I make videos and occasionally write articles for West England Bylines.
I'm Chris Davis and I've recently moved to Brighton in East Sussex and I'm involved in Sussex Bylines.
So Chris, how did you first become involved in politics?
So it started from quite a young age, to be honest. A lot of my upbringing was around sort of reading newspapers. I was given them when I was a young kid on the weekend to read. My parents are both teachers, so when there were teachers' strikes and marches, they would take me on them. So it was always quite active in my household with debates and things. I guess the main sort of part of where I got involved and my sort of understanding developed was when I was sort of 15, under sort of the Tory and Lib Dem coalition and sort of the understandings of austerity and what that actually meant, and the harm it was doing. And it really got me sort of angry and involved at that level. So I joined the Labour Party at 15. I was campaigning and door knocking and doing phone banking before I could even vote. And it's all sort of gone from there, I guess. Same with university, same thing kind of developed with the Labour Society. I studied human geography as well. So that sort of broadened my horizons and showed me what things around the world were actually like, not just in the UK. And it's just continued from there. And I've wanted to continuously keep involved and try and engage more people and show them what's going on in society.
Wow. So you literally started from a very young age.
Very young. Very, very young. I guess I have my parents to thank for that. Mainly my mum, to be honest. But yeah, very, very young age. Door knocking at the age of 15 was quite intimidating, to be honest. You know, you're going up to some random person's house and they're opening the door and they're like, "Who are you?" It's like, "Oh, hi, I'm Chris. I'm knocking from the Labour Party. Did you know there's an election?" But after years of doing that, it's nothing. Like you learn to avoid some houses where potentially there's a dog that will bite your fingers off if you put a leaflet through the letterbox. And yeah, some of the best times I've had have been doorstepping with other activists and having those discussions. And I think that's a really important thing and also played a massive part in the development of my ideas, to be honest. Having those conversations with people who don't necessarily agree with you, it's all very well to go and speak to people who you know are supportive. It's a completely different ballgame to have that debate and discussion and try and change someone's mind. You may well be successful in that, you may not, but at least if you haven't changed someone's mind, you've learned what to potentially say for next time to try and bring them around to your way of thinking.
See, how I got first involved in politics, again, from a very young age. Like, fun fact about me, I was born in Cape Town.
Wow.
Yeah. And I grew up there for like the first 4 years of my life. And then I moved here when my dad got a job for a university. So from a very young age, I always felt this, I always felt like this connection to like this far off place that I vaguely remembered. And so I spent like the first couple of years being very excited every time Cape Town or South Africa was mentioned. And as I got older, I learned more and more about the history of South Africa, which, in case you didn't know, extremely racist, particularly in the recent history. So, you know, I learned about like the apartheid state and like the Dumpas and the, quite frankly, ludicrous laws people had to obey over there, particularly when you take into perspective that this was a minority controlling a majority of people. And of course, I learn about like the exploits of Nelson Mandela and Walter Sisulu and O.R. Tambo and Kathy, and just like what these people did to free their people. And, you know, the movement that gathered worldwide when they were all in prison, particularly around like the whole Free Nelson Mandela. In fact, my dad still has like a placard or a poster with Nelson Mandela's face in the ANC colors with Free Nelson Mandela on it somewhere.
Wow.
So there was that. And then at 15, I became a lot more active online, and issues were arisen to me, both in terms of like gender politics and queer politics, that I kind of just went, oh, so there's still some idiocy around today. And, you know, one of the best ways that I thought to deal with this problem would be to like be more involved in like politics, because politicians are the ones who make the real power, right? So if I become involved in politics, that maybe I can find ways to convince these people to stop it. It was then I became more and more involved in politics. Again, like you, when the Tory coalition came into power, I call them the condemnation, because that it turns out that's what happened.
I don't know about you, if there was there one sticking point for you that you can pinpoint when sort of you went, this is horrible, I've had enough of this. I think for me it was definitely tuition fees. I know that sounds like quite a sort of typical point for people my age, but I remember that was a specific point where I was like, actually, this is going to affect me in the next 3 years directly.
You know what, I was actually excited by the Tory Liberal Democrat coalition. You know, I was 15, my mind kind of went, oh, this has never happened before. I wonder what's going to happen. And then with each year that passed and more Tory policies went in and very few Liberal Democrat policies went in, I kind of became angrier and angrier. And that has continued to this day. So, but it's like every passing day rather than every passing year. It's kind of just gone like that.
The increments of anger have gotten closer together.
Yeah.
I think for me, I didn't really have like one moment. Like Chris, you say it was tuition fees. For me, kind of similar to Jules, I got kind of a more greater understanding about gender politics from quite a young age, I think. I went to an all-girls school, so I was always kind of surrounded by like clever women and teachers that didn't think any less of me than kind of like a boy my age. But I think when I was doing my A-levels and studying history, which I literally like live and breathe, that is my degree at the moment, I kind of thought that history and politics were intertwined and you couldn't really understand one without the other. And so I got a subscription with The Economist and kind of read like a couple of articles a day in between revising for my A-levels, and then, yeah, signed up to do history and politics at Leeds, and then eventually became kind of more involved in actual like politics and writing articles kind of about global issues more than like local issues. Like Chris, you went knocking on people's doors. Mine was kind of more chatting to my friends, having debates with my mum and dad, which they probably weren't that pleased about, but I think that especially over the past year with Black Lives Matter, even my mum has admitted that I've kind of like taught her a lot and her awareness has increased from like talking to younger people and seeing a different, a view on things.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned history as well. Like, I'm an avid amateur historian. It's like this started even before I got involved in politics. So I read Horrible Histories.
Mm-hmm. And, I remember those books.
Oh, I have the entire first edition collection at home in my attic. It's my, I love it. Particularly when you take into consideration they cover stuff that history books don't normally tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And like there was like all these eras of history, like Tudors and British, they even did the British Empire. And I learned nothing of the British Empire. at school. So that was basically like my one point from it. And there was always like this idea of, well, if they hid all, if the history books hid all this from us, what else did they hide?
Yeah, yeah. I think definitely when I got to uni and started doing history, I thought that the curriculum at school was so kind of narrow and didn't cover half of what has actually happened. And then more recently with there's been like a new Tory group called the Common Sense Group, who kind of have everything but common sense, and they're trying to cover up like Churchill and like the slavery that Churchill supported, and kind of the Bengal famine that he said was like a brilliant thing. I think definitely, yeah, I think definitely that the two come hand in hand, and that if you're talking about politics, you have to know the history behind it, and the same with history and understanding the kind of social context at the time.
Quite frankly, I don't know why. Well, I mean, I know why, but it's still obscene to me that I learned more about American politics in the late 20th century than I did for British history in the late 20th century. If you were to dig into British history of the late 20th century, then you will find that politics and what we did then were like very much intertwined. Like some
definitely, yeah. I think
very
people
toxic
always talk
marriage.
About, yeah, I think people talk about like the American slave trade, but they miss that that wouldn't have happened without the British Empire. And well, obviously America were one of our colonies, and they kind of weren't independent until only a couple of hundred years ago, which in the grand scheme of things really is not that long ago at all.
I think it's super interesting because a lot of people, I think Kerry kind of alluded to it earlier, like people view history and politics as completely separate entities. No. Like the events of history they think are isolated. It's like, actually, no. I mean, just recent, I mean, you can't really compare it to the issues you were just talking about, but Brexit, for example, in say 200 years time, are people going to go, oh, the UK left the European Union, full stop. That was a point in history. But we've lived through that, and that, like, that's a major historical event. Seeing that unfold and seeing it originate in like the nasty corner of UK politics, if you think about it in context of other historical events, they must have had the same catalyst, they must have had the same drivers, the same political links, the same political causes, maybe not the same, but still political causes. So it's even more important to have engagement in politics and current affairs by young people, because
I think the example of Brexit is quite a good one, because like you say, people in 100 years time will be learning about the 2016 referendum, but I also think that it would have helped a lot of people, both who voted Remain and Leave, to actually understand the history behind the EU rather than just see it in the moment as immigration or fishing, you know, all of the reasons that people gave for leaving or staying. I think more context was needed to understand like the value of the union.
I mean, it's not perfect organization by any means, but the whole way that the campaign went and was sort of played out, I remember I was in sort of the last year of sixth form and I couldn't vote by a month. I hadn't turned 18 by a month. And a lot of my friends were able to, and it was the first time. And they were just, they didn't give a crap, basically. They were like, well, nothing's changed in the last sort of 10 years. Like, what if we just vote leave because nothing's going to happen anyway? And they all did it because they thought it was a laugh. I don't know if there was any sort of understanding there. Maybe there was, not that I remember. I just remember that conversation sticking in my head. We're going to do it for a laugh. Yeah. And it's like, but where's the understanding there?
Yeah.
But I think even from what you've said, it sounds like they maybe marginalized is the wrong word, but they were kind of felt disattached from politics and from the EU, which I think the state have a responsibility to kind of keep people engaged, especially young people, because obviously we're going to be most affected by political decisions at the moment. I think that people have to commit themselves and help others to kind of read about the impact of decisions like Brexit or even general elections.
So would you say that your interest in politics is what drew all of us to be involved in Byalines?
Yeah, well, for me, I started writing for The Griffin, which is Leeds University News, and just tried sharing like a few articles on LinkedIn, mainly to kind of build up a profile and, you know, try and network out. And then somebody reached out to me on LinkedIn that wrote for Yorkshire Bylines already and said, why don't you try this a go? Kind of, we're looking for a few more international articles, which is where my main interest lies. And then I began, I submitted my first article, which I remember was about the impact of Brexit on Schengen, free movement in Europe. And then from there, I just kind of wrote an article every week or, yeah, every month or so. And now I've written 20 for Yorkshire Bylines and I'm still doing more for them.
Nice. No, my motivation to join Bylines was twofold because, as I said earlier, I'm very active online. Like that's just like the nature of how I grew up. And it did get to a point where it's just like, I need to do more. Like I felt the need to like go out to more process because, you know, being politically active online is great and it's all fine and it's raising awareness and all that good stuff. It can only do so much. So I have this very strong need to be like, I need to do more. And since moving to Bristol, I can say I have now been to more protests than I did at university. But Bylines was a great way for me to like be a little bit more politically active and raise awareness through like an actual organization. And the other motivation was I was a filmmaker who hadn't been involved in a film production for like 2 years when I released my first video for West England. So that was another big strong point for it. But you know, those two things were married to me. So yeah, I joined Byline to like feel like I was doing more.
It's kind of very similar to what happened with me. Like when I was at uni and even before then I was writing sort of little blog pieces there's a website called Backbench. It still exists. It's very similar to Bylines, but I don't think it's as I think it's a very different organization from that was a while ago. And I wrote sort of articles for them, sent them off, they got edited, sent back and then published, and it was all, you had to make sure it was all sourced, you had to make sure it was all backed up by actual information. It wasn't just sort of, you could write anything and publish it. But that's sort of what I did, like literally on anything that happened or anything that came to my head. Like I literally wrote about sort of like voter suppression in Catalonia when the referendum happened for them to separate. Like I wrote about whether Tony Blair was a hero or a war criminal. Like more or less anything that came to my head. So towards the end of uni, I sort of dropped off a bit from writing and got involved with the People's Vote campaign. So that sort of took over a lot of my time. And then upon moving to Brighton, I discovered sort of the regional Bylines groups and I really wanted to take up writing again and sort of start contributing. And that's where I've ended up where I am.
I think you make quite a good point there, actually, that you were writing articles about that kind of anything that came to your head. And I think that if I had like one little bit of advice to give young people that were looking to get involved is literally write about anything that genuinely interests you and don't try and write about something that you know other people would read but you don't necessarily connect with it or even understand it, because like 9 times out of 10 the article isn't going to be of the same standard that it maybe would be if you'd written about Catalonia and voter suppression. I think that's quite a good thing to point out, actually.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And like getting involved in Sussex Bylines has shown me that. Like I've written about, like for our launch of our Future Our Voices section, which is like a youth sort of section of Sussex Bylines. It's not just articles, it's photos. We're looking to sort of potentially start a YouTube channel as well, covering issues across Sussex. But I wrote an article about recycling in Brighton and Hove, which is not something I ever thought I would be writing about. But it's the article's got a lot of traction, and people have sort of commented and gone, I never knew this about my recycle. I never knew my plastic went and got burnt and it wasn't sort of turned into new plastics. So yeah, like absolutely, you can. It's not, you don't have to write about a certain thing, anything that's interesting to you or you're passionate about. It will reflect in the writing as well, I think.
Yeah, my first article for West England was about like why the young don't vote, and it's basically just me speculating on the side of young people everywhere, just like why we don't feel motivated to go out to the ballot box. And it was like a mix. I concluded it was like a mixture of things, but mostly it was just it was the political parties not willing to meet us halfway, because I genuinely believe that young people are like the most politically active group ever, you know, at least since like the 60s. But you know, we're out there signing petitions and protesting and being existentially worried about climate change. And then there are just the politicians on all sides, by the way. It's not just the Tories, but it's the politicians who are just being like, we'll deal with this tomorrow, and then putting it off week after week after week. So yeah, that genuinely interested me at the time. So I wrote about it and it got very well received. So yeah, it is just a case of like writing what interests you, and I guarantee you, it will find an audience somewhere.
Definitely. I'd even written an article about the Haribo factory in Pontefract, which I'd never even been to until recently. I went to DIY kitchens. But anyway, I'd written about the impact of Brexit on Haribo, which I thought would get no attention whatsoever. But actually, local people in Yorkshire really enjoyed the article, and I interviewed kind of a local activist who had been like a staunch pro-Remainer, and yeah, the article did really well actually.
So what would you guys say interests us most about politics?
I mean, a big part of my involvement is like we kind of touched on it, is I want young people to be involved and engaged, because you know, you see the crop of local councillors who've been elected in recent weeks, and yet there are quite a few young people, but not enough. I don't feel like young people potentially do want to get involved because they don't think they'll be able to make a difference. I think organizations like Bylines are good at that. I think they have a reach which sort of a lot of organizations don't have. Social media, like Jules, you mentioned it before, like that's probably a huge part of a lot of people our age is sort of development of ideas, and sort of maybe not just echo chambers, but also the debates that you have on Twitter and Facebook and things. It was important to me that I wasn't sort of the only one sat around a table with a group of friends who wanted to talk about something important, and they kind of just went, "Nah, I don't want to. I don't think that's interesting. Like, it's not important." You know, issues like the marketization of education are important. They do affect you directly. You know, local elections, people turnouts low, people don't think they're important. They are. They affect where you live, like what happens where you live as well. So trying to get people to understand that their voice and their vote makes a difference, basically.
Yeah, I think I have the same kind of ambition to get more young people writing and talking about politics, because as much as I love social media and think that it is actually a good place to actually learn a lot, I think that it can often be your like preaching to the converted, where you kind of get in your own little bubble and think that everybody agrees with you, but actually then when you step out into like the real world, you come across a lot more people that disagree with you and kind of have more extreme views than you. And I think that writing to a broad audience is a good way of kind of consolidating your ideas and putting a good argument together, where you're not just going to get people that come back and agree with you, you're going to get people that challenge you and give you a chance to kind of come up with a new argument in a way to try and change other people's ideas and for you to learn yourself about other people's opinions. Like, I'm so in support of social media and attending protests, but ultimately I think if you don't turn up to vote, like, what was the point of you going on that protest to like kill the bill? If you're not even going to bother to attend. And I know that in a lot of instances, people don't feel like they can relate to the politicians on paper, but I think that we do have a duty to, especially as young people, we do have a duty to get our voice out there in ways other than tweeting and protesting, personally, I think.
Yeah, like when I went to Greta Thunberg coming to Bristol last year, there was like a small part of me which was kind of like leapt for joy a little bit, because most of the people there were either like young adults or teenagers, and they were, you know, all talking about like how, you know, all there because A, they admired Greta, and B, because they felt passionately about like climate change. But yeah, there is like a little bit of a gap between you know, people voicing their opinions online and protesting and signing petitions and then turning up to the ballot box. You know, the numbers have gone up, you know, because I've done a lot of research into this, particularly recently. The numbers for youth turnout have gone up, but, you know, the last time I checked, it was like something like 55% compared to the over 70s, which was like 63% of them voted at the last, you know, big general election. And when I talked to Liz Webster about it, I couldn't even find how many young people voted in the local elections. Because either the number is very, very small, so it's insignificant, or because, you know, the ONS or whoever do it just don't look into that.
And I'm kind of shocked, actually, that, I mean, I wouldn't imagine, I mean, just based on anecdotal experience, I don't really know any people my age who voted in the police and crime commissioner elections. That were, I think they were everywhere. And considering, I mean, in Brighton at least, the Kill the Bill protests have been happening every week, and they've had hundreds, potentially thousands of people at each one. And then turnout amongst people I know, people I work with, was just zero. Like, I think I was the only person in my office, bar one other person, who voted on that day. And it was just like, this kind of blows my mind. Like, this is a current topic. It's a person that has probably a major impact on whether this legislation is amended, rejected, accepted, and you just don't want to vote for it. You don't want to have any sort of involvement in it. Like, there is, I think, there is a gap between the people that sort of march on the streets with placards and then the ones who turn up to the ballot box.
I think the same. Even though, to be honest, a lot of my friends at uni who are on my course, so quite political already, they do all go to vote. But I think a lot of my friends from home, even though they care about the issues, like you say, that they're attending protests for, I think that they, and I for a long time was the same, don't like acknowledge the connection between a local like police and crime commissioner or your local mayor, and they don't see it in the bigger picture. They think that it only affects their wheelie bins and potholes, but actually obviously it's a much bigger issue than that.
I young people do vote, but I think we only really vote at like general elections, because those are like the big, you know, the big statements of like, oh, I come from a Tory area, but we managed to kick the last MP out for a Labour guy. You know, that sounds a lot better than, you know, I voted for like a majority Green council. Because, you know, the council does the wheelie bins, the MPs decide our laws, kind of thing.
I think that's spot on. I think that, and actually it may be the fault of sort of mainstream medias and newspapers and things. Whilst the local elections did get a lot of coverage, it wasn't really in the sense of like, oh, there were red wall areas which are losing Labour councillors. Hartlepool, okay, went to the Conservatives. But that wasn't like the only picture that was happening. Like the episode last week kind of covered that quite well, I think. Like areas which had never had Labour councillors before. Like I was reading an article this morning about the People's Republic of Chipping Norton in Oxfordshire, who sort of are working on a coalition of Labour, Green and Lib Dem councillors to take over the local authority. And I mean, if the disconnect may also be between, you know, you need to take part in local elections. You need to be aware of local issues because they are important. They are, like I said before, they affect where you live, how you live, the services you have access to. I was at work and trying to get people to register to vote, and I don't really think anyone listened. Like I put a really long sort of Slack post in we've got our office, and I said, like, make sure you vote, guys. It's a deadline of the 19th of April. Like, I think one person reacted to it, and it was like, well, that's a bit depressing. but just trying to get more engagement, which is a huge, huge problem, especially at a local level.
So going on to the last question of this podcast, how do you think we can get more people involved? Because for me, it's about persistence. You know, there have been a few people that I know who that weren't very political when I started getting political. So like they would always listen to me talking about like the politics of apartheid South Africa or the politics of the condemnation and like what they were doing and this, that, the other. And they just kind of sat there in a corner reading their books going, yes, Julian, yes, apartheid is bad. But as I grew up and I became angrier and more insistent about like how important politics is, there have been like a few people who listened to me and did become a little bit more politically engaged, not necessarily online, which is fine, but they talk to me about politics now and they do seem to be rather interested in it. But, you know, that angle doesn't always necessarily work. Persistence is one of them, but I don't necessarily think it's like the only way to do it.
No, I think that it is, yeah, like you say, definitely an option. And I think, Chris, even though when you put a message in the chat and you only got one reply, I think that it's like good that you still do that. And I think that like you should continue to do that, because if next time you get two responses, then like, you know, every little helps.
I will continue to do it. Someone try and stop me.
Well, it's like the story of the guy throwing starfish back into the sea. Have you guys heard this story?
No.
So basically there was this story that I heard back when I was in scouts or something about a guy going onto the beach, and there's like thousands of starfish just on the sand. And if they can't get back into the ocean, they're not going to survive. And there's just this one guy picking them up and throwing them back into the ocean. And the guy walks up to the guy throwing them and says, why are you doing this? There are thousands. You're not going to make any kind of difference to any of them. And then the guy looks at him, picks up another starfish, throws it back into the ocean, and just goes, I just made a difference to that one.
I think that it's important not to see it on like a really large level and to try and like change the whole world. What I always say is try and change like your corner of the world by like having conversations with your friends, maybe writing like a blog post or an article, chatting with your mum, with like your family about it. I think that can actually have more impact and also keep up the momentum, because when I sit and think about like big global issues, I can get like low and start thinking, oh well, I'm never going to be able to change it. But then I think, well, I'm studying history and politics, I'm writing articles, like I'm doing my bit. And I think that that's what young people should try and remember, and also to remember that like politics isn't just for like highbrow people and for academics, it's for everyone. Like it's literally for the people. So don't be put off by like experts trying to tell you like how something is. Like it's up to you to form your own opinion and then debate with other people.
I think you're spot on. Like the one thing that kind of that supported that, like I remember door knocking in a I think it was like it were local elections a few years ago, And there was one ward which turned Labour by like just a couple of votes. And I remember that day I'd had conversations with people who were going to vote Tory or Lib Dem and then change their mind as a result of the conversations we'd had. And it was like, actually, I could have turned that person around. That vote could have been somebody I changed.
And
like, that's a tiny, like, it's a ward in a council. I can't remember where it was. I think it was Wandsworth or something. But like, that was sort of, wow, okay, just one conversation, one or two conversations can make a difference to so much.
But you know, it stuff like that really just goes to show like how significant one person can be. And I mean, in Bristol, you talked about like mainstream media not covering it, not covering like all the positive stories. Bristol had like a green wave over here. Like the mayor who got elected in Bristol was the Labour guy, but he only won by like 16,000 votes. And the next guy under him was the Green candidate, which is unheard of in mayoral elections. And the Bristol Council itself, Labour lost 24 seats to the Greens. So now they have the same number of seats and they're both like, they have like this uneasy truce between each other. But yeah, it really just goes to show like, at least at a local level, people can make a difference and you just have to like, you know, take it one story at a time. You know, particularly for me, like if I hadn't joined like a couple of websites, I would not know as much about, you know, gay politics or gay history as I do now. And I would not be engaged in that at all.
Same way in which, like, I think organizations like Bylines are so important. You know, the writers that, you know, you guys, Kerry's written some fantastic stuff. Like the other writers we've gotten for the regional pages, like those ideas and those articles are great. And more people need to get involved and do stuff like that. The support that you get for writing, the support that you get in development of your ideas and skills as well. Like, it's not just writing, it's like photography, podcasts, YouTube channels, art. It's fantastic. And I think more organizations need to kind of take that model and put it forward.
Thanks to Chris for joining us for this week's episode. You can see his work on the Sussex Byline Project, Our Future, Our Voice.
You can follow this podcast at Bylines Pod on Twitter and Facebook.
Our hosts this week were Kerry Pearson, Julian Greenbank and Chris Davis.
Our music was Voxel Revolution by Kevin MacLeod. Thanks, Kevin.